Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. This is Dr. Sherry Denham, and I'm here with Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. Jill Hubbard, sitting in for Steve Arterburn today, and we're here with you and your calls. So give us a call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
I really enjoy your show.
Hi, you guys are the best.
Well, thank you.
Thanks.
What a combination of wisdom and fun.
When we finally did it, and he walked out into the living room and said, "Well, I know it's not my birthday," and sat down on the couch.
Oh, I thought you said he had died. He divorced 10 years ago.
Dave, it was Dave's fault. Another name for firstborn is crash test dummy. And, you know, because we're learning a lot of stuff as parents.
There's a horse and there's a cart.
This is not a 3-year-old problem with your husband. This could have started in junior high school, high school. We don't know.
See, right now we like each other, but we're not really being the kind of person that we would want to be to make it work. You follow me?
Welcome back to New Life Live. This is Dr. Sherry Denham, and I'm sitting in for Steve Arterburn here with Henry and Jill. And I have a question for you, Henry.
Is it an easy one?
It might be.
All right.
It might be. Okay, so I walk every morning up in the hills, get a chance to look over and the green and all of that. And, you know, here in June, everything's kind of growing and budding, and I'm noticing all these new sprigs. So I brought
sprigs.
I brought you a little something here today.
Wow.
I have.
That is beautiful.
It is. For those of you on TV, you can see it. It's actually a vine with, it's a grapevine.
And that's a grapevine?
It's a grapevine. And
this is for me?
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And for those of you that can't see, that are just listening to us, you'll notice that, look at this. There's all these places that have been cut off and pruned. And I am like, but there's the new life growing out of the pruning is so obvious. I thought about it. If you didn't have the new life growing out of this, it would look basically like a stick, right? It would look like a stick. But the greenery gives it life. So it made me think of your book, Necessary Endings. And I wondered if you could tell us about that a little bit.
That is really cool. I don't have a green thumb.
You don't?
So, no, I can't grow anything. But so now I have an actual example. Now, I have to ask, what do I do with this? Do I put it in a pot, or is it bigger than that? Is it like a tree?
You could put it in a pot, but I would actually put it in the ground somewhere near maybe a pole or a trellis or something, because it's a grapevine.
And it's going to have grapes on it?
It'll have grapes on it. You can make grape juice. You can eat grapes. You can put grapes in the freezer and
Let them.
In June, you know, a lot of kids do that. Instead of popsicles, you eat frozen grapes.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to give you the progress report. Thank you.
Well, do that. So tell us about your book.
Oh.
And the pruning.
Well, Necessary Endings, it's a concept we don't hear a lot about. You hear a lot about losses. You know, when people go through things that end because they weren't choosing for them to end.
Yeah.
You know, divorce or death or things that happen in life that are traumatic losses.
Right.
But what we don't hear enough about and that the Bible talks about very specifically are proactive endings that we step up and create. If you go to the book of Ecclesiastes, for example, in chapter 3,
mm-hmm.
and it, you know that great passage of there's a season for everything.
Right. Time.
It says
so,
a time to plant,
time to
a time to uproot what has been planted. A time to embrace, a time to shun from embracing, a time to seek, a time to give up is lost. And it's a chapter about beginnings and endings, but most of the endings are proactive endings. And the Bible is full of God asking us to step up and realize that a season is over and to step up and end something that should be ended. Abraham had to end his life in the city of Ur or the land of Ur to go forward to create, you know, the nation of Israel. Jesus called his disciples and they had to end what they were doing and on and on and on and on and on. These necessary endings. Well, another metaphor about that is pruning. And pruning is an ending, and it's where you clip things from the vine that are taking up resources of the vine that are in the way of the vine creating the vision you want it to have. And our life is like that. We can talk more after the break, but it's a very important concept to growth and to making life work.
So if you want new growth, give us a call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Look forward to taking your calls.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to New Life Live. This is Sherry Denham sitting in for Steve Arterburn, and I'm here with Henry Cloud and Jill Hubbard. Hello, hello. Welcome back.
Hey, Jill.
Hey. Hey, I like your tree.
My tree? Actually, you missed the intro there.
No, I saw it.
But Dr. Sherry gave me a tree.
I know. That's great.
It's a grapevine, so hopefully it'll bring you
We'll look forward to hearing about your pruning and growing.
Yeah.
How you get a green finger.
A little more about the pruning thing, though.
Yeah.
We, if you know how to grow plants, which I don't, but what the experts tell me is that you prune something in three instances. One is that the tree is going to produce more branches than it can feed. So you have to find the best ones and prune the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
The second instance is that there are some branches that are sick and you try everything possible and they're just not going to get well.
A wimpy branch.
A wimpy or diseased.
Yeah,
and you clip that one. And the third one is the dead stuff that's just taking up space. Mm-hmm. Well, in our lives...
It sucks the life out.
It sucks the life out. Yeah, yeah. And in our lives, we have all three of those. You have more activities over time that your life creates. You're in more small groups than you ought to be. You're going to more circles of this and that and activities and more cable channels than you can pay for and more meetings and blah, blah, blah. That's just a function of being alive, but we're hoarders. Mm-hmm. So we don't throw things away that take up time and space and energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to Ephesians 2, it says that God has put things out in front of us that we're supposed to be walking in, that are already like good works that are laid down beforehand. It says that we should walk in. And we're not supposed to be walking in a bunch of stuff we're walking in, even though it might be good stuff. We're not called to that. It's not our gift set, but we can't say no. So necessary endings would be that you prune the stuff that's not the best use of your time and heart and resources. And then that second one, especially where there are, you know, sometimes people and friends and extended family, you know, that they're severely toxic and just refusing, staying in tonight, refusing to get well. You tried everything. You fertilize them. You know, you give them more sunlight. Right. You do everything possible. And
try to get them into rehab.
And you try to get them in. You do everything. And then you have to say, you know what? I'm going to have to be separate from you until you get it. And the pruning function, the New Testament talks about it over and over and over. It's very important.
Wow. Well, thank you.
And the whole book, Necessary Endings, is really about how that metaphor plays out in life.
Wisdom from the vine.
From the vine.
Vine dresser there. Well, hey, let's go to the calls. We are going to talk with Linda here. Linda is calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania, from station WBYN. Hey, Linda.
Hey.
You
guys are wonderful. I'm so thankful that I have a job where I can listen to you guys every day.
Oh.
So I just wanted to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. I wish you were closer. Closer to me.
Well, we are close to your heart right now, and we would love to know how we can help you.
Oh, you know, I really don't, you know where to start, and I really have to try to get through this as fast as I can because I don't want to keep you guys too long, but I just have a real problem right now. I've been married over 20-some years to a wonderful man. It's actually my second husband.
Okay.
And I have a daughter from my first marriage with married and has kids, and everything's good with her. But my husband and I have gone through some ups and some downs, but in the last couple of years, he actually was laid off permanently. He's in a job where they just started laying people off permanently.
All right.
And he was...
How old is he?
Problem.
How old is he, Linda?
He's 60.
Okay.
He's 60.
All right.
He's had a problem in the past with drinking, with alcohol, but he's been able to have a beer now and then, and that's it, you know. Every once in a while, I come home from work and drink some beers. And lately, I'm having a real, real hard time because he's a very good man. We go to church. We do Bible study. We do a lot of other things together. But every day, I come home from work, and I know exactly where he is. And it's like it goes into stages. He can drink a couple, and he can be nice, and he has a garden, and he's, you know, works out in the garden, and he gets to a certain stage where I can just see the stages changing as he's going through it every night, and it gets to the point where he's at the last stage where he just can be very mean, not physically, but just very mean.
So angry and all of
that.
Yeah,
very degrading and very, you know, where I just will continually try my very hardest to just try to give him positiveness every day. No,
so,
I'm not perfect, but I try very hard because my husband and I love him.
What have you done right now to try to...
I've tried to talk him into talking to pastors of our church because we're very fortunate to belong to a very good church. I've tried to do that, and, you know, he'll get to a point and go, yeah, yeah, you know. And I've tried to even have us go to marriage things that the church runs just in the last couple of weeks, the last month.
Uh-huh.
And he said, well, that's not me. I've gone through that before.
Linda, you've asked him to talk to the pastor or go to counseling about what?
Well, I talked to pastors already in my church and said that I think that he has a serious problem. And they said for them to talk to him, that I should go to him because they don't want to just approach him if he doesn't know that. You know what I'm saying? Like, just like out of shock. Like just
yeah,
say, okay.
But is that what you've talked to your husband about his drinking?
Yeah. Yeah, what? About drinking. I've said about drinking, and they said that they'll gladly talk to him if he comes to them, but he doesn't... I know he knows in his heart he has a bomb, but for him to go to them and talk to them on a regular basis,
Linda,
he hasn't done it.
What's your question for us? We kind of...
My question is for you is... How long do I need to do this? Because there is a woman in my Bible study who I'm so thankful she's in my Bible study, who her husband's gone through the same thing and actually had a stroke. And I don't want to see him get to that point. And the longer that I just sit and come home every day and watch his drinking over and over and over again with
Linda,
nothing changing.
Right. You're scared.
I don't know what to do.
You're scared.
I'm scared, very scared.
Right.
I don't know what to do, and it's wearing me down. It's
so
really physically wearing me down and him. I see his changes in him.
Have you, Linda,
it's wearing him down.
Have you asked your husband how he feels?
No, I haven't really. There's been times when I can talk to him, which are usually in the morning we sit down before work, before I go to work, and we pray together.
Okay,
and I try to sit down and say, what's on your mind? But he doesn't really open up a whole lot.
I'm thinking that might be a softer approach. Instead of just focusing on your drinking and I don't want you to drink and let's change that. I mean, yes, that's a goal and that needs to be addressed. But also to try to reach his heart in some way because he's drinking for a reason. And granted, he's been drinking over the long haul. So that's become his way of coping. So... What is he needing to cope with? What are his feelings? Is
right
he depressed?
Now, right now, I think the serious problem that helps him drink more is him being unemployed and worrying about our bills. Right now, we've been behind on a lot of bills, and he has this in his mind.
So he's numbing
a lot of it.
He's numbing out with the alcohol.
Yeah.
And he's trying to not feel. And Jill is inviting you into is to begin to explore what's going on underneath that alcohol use. Because if he feels understood or if you make that attempt to really understand him, he's maybe going to be more open to doing something about it. One of the things would be, you know, addressing his drinking. That's one of the things. But he's probably very depressed. I mean, men going without a job... Regardless of how many people are unemployed right now, it's a really hard thing for a man. What does he do with himself? What does he tell himself about himself all day long?
And so he's bombarding himself probably, you know, with negative thoughts. And so the drinking helps to shut that out. So I think you have to start by letting him know how much you care about him and what he's feeling and what he's going through right now. Mm-hmm. And then I think it's good to tell him, you know, that you're scared. You understand why he might feel those ways, why he might turn to the drinking, but you're really scared. And in light of that,
every day I'll tell him, even when we sit down and pray in the morning, I'll tell him, you know, I love you very much, but I hate to see you like this. You're better than that. You have been such a strong influence in my life. I mean, I try to build.
Okay, but Linda, let me stop you for a minute, because I want you, because as you're talking here with us, and I know it's radio and you're trying to get a lot in, you talk very fast with a lot of words, like many of us women do. And so with him, I think you need to give a little bit more space to try to draw him out. Instead of filling up the space with all of your words and your anxious, you know, wanting to help, sit there. Be still with him. Ask him how he's feeling. Draw him out.
Linda, you said that you had asked him to go to counseling. Was that right?
Yeah, I had asked him to go to counseling.
When?
Well, I've asked him a couple times. I don't even know how many times I've asked him, like, in the last couple months. But as I've seen it progress.
And what have you asked him to go to counseling about?
I've asked him to go to counseling. First of all, he's one right now with what he's going through to put blame on me on everything. Like, it's my fault I don't do this.
Linda,
it's my fault
Linda,
I don't
Linda,
do that.
Let me interrupt you. What have you asked him to go to counseling about?
I've asked him to go to counseling for his drinking.
For his drinking?
For his drinking.
And he says, I don't have a drinking problem. Is that what he says?
Well, he'll just go, yeah, you know. He doesn't really say if he does or he doesn't.
Okay,
let
me make a suggestion here. What Jill was saying is you take the initial step of trying to connect with him about what he's going through. When you were talking about how you talk with him, you're trying to build him up. You said you're better than that. You can, you know, you're trying to encourage him, right?
Right.
Well, what Jill was talking about, I think, was the opposite of that. Instead of trying to make him feel better, begin to see if you can connect with the underneath stuff that feels so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, it just, I feel for you. It seems like it's so unfair what happened, and it's been so long. And can you just tell me what it's like for you? Because if he can start talking about that, then you guys are on the same side of the table again. But if that doesn't work and you talk to him about getting some help, it sounds like that he's not really into getting the help for the drinking, which is about him. And if he's not, then I think the next approach is that you tell him that you want the two of you to go get some help for your marriage. Because right now, this isn't working for you. And you make it about you and mm-hmm. your problem. Because he doesn't have a problem, according to him. But when a man has a wife that says, I don't like being here. I don't like coming home and not having anybody to talk to at night because you're out in the yard, you know, drunk, and I feel lonely and this, that, and the other. It's not about the drinking. It's about me and my problem being in this house alone, and I want to go get some help for that. And then if he won't go, then you can go talk to a good counselor that understands alcohol problems. And you can begin to figure out the next steps. But I would think that that's kind of the progression. And mm-hmm. or you might throw into the mix somewhere, if he's not listening to you, that maybe there's a friend that can help. Maybe a pastor.
Right. But also, Linda, you know, a lot of people, when you encounter someone who's depressed, you try to cheer them up by going to the opposite side of things instead of joining with them in your pain. And often what that communicates is that you can't tolerate their pain. So if you can't tolerate it, why is he going to talk with you? When you are able to hear it, it doesn't make him more depressed. And people say that, well, I don't want to make the person more depressed. No, when you hear it with them, then he can tolerate it and move from it.
Isn't that funny how sometimes we think if we go into the pit, it's kind of the
we're just
going to
all wallow there.
We're going to wallow there, or they're going to get worse. It's like, my
they're
goodness.
They're going to take me down with them?
Exactly. But it's, as Henry said, it's the opposite that happens. It actually helps relieve them from some of that that's underneath and relieve some of that stress. He has someone to talk to. And you know what? You need help, too. I would recommend you find a good Al-Anon group in your area.
I tried that. You know what? I've tried going to that, and I've gone for, like, maybe it's just not a good one. I don't know. I mean, it's at a church, but I tried going there for, like a month. It's not very, very long, but it's just like everybody goes around and says what's on their mind, and then they end the meeting, and it's not really, you know, other than that.
You have to go.
You've
got to try
one.
Different groups and go for a period of time.
And maybe the group is this kind of a replication of your marriage, in that maybe all those people sharing their problems is a part of what Jill was just talking about, that it's hard for you to contain that and hold that. But you've got to
go. Or know how that will help.
Exactly. But you've got to press into that, because there's people that are there that can help you grow in your ability to hear and then also get help for yourself. So we'll be right back. Give us a call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
I wish I was who you think I am. The one you thought you married. The ideal husband, the amazing dad, the great lover. But my mind is filled with darkness, with images that I can't erase. I want so desperately to be the man you dreamed of. The man I know I can be. I am terrified to talk to you about this. But I want to. I need to. I want us to be close just as badly as you do. Can I talk to you? Can we be totally honest and know that we love each other enough to be open?
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help. I want help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before, or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
Welcome back. You're listening to New Life Live. This is Dr. Sherry Denham sitting in for Steve Arterburn, and I'm here with Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. Jill Hubbard. And your calls. And Linda, we just finished talking to Linda. We're going to send you the book, Healing is a Choice, Linda. And, you know, Linda is not alone in her fear and struggle with someone that she loves who's caught up in drinking. A lot of our listeners call. They have either struggled with it themselves, or they have got a spouse that's struggling with it. And we have a drug and alcohol treatment center. That's integrated. It's a faith-based drug and alcohol treatment center. So we would love for those of you that are looking for help to give us a call at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. We'd be happy to tell you about the program and what we can do to help your loved one. So give us a call.
And you know what? That is usually the way it happens. It's not the person who's addicted that usually goes for help.
You're right.
It's someone who loves them, but doesn't know what to do with them. You know, just like our last caller, if you've never dealt with addicts, then you do what's not helpful, which is you try to help them. And usually that doesn't help because the enabling pattern begins to start.
Or telling him to stop it. Just stop it. You just stop it.
Even
just
though,
stop
I mean,
it.
You're really, you know, you're always trying to help. And, you know, she was trying to build him up and encourage him. But there's an addictive process going on a lot of times.
You're right, Henry.
That addictive process has to be treated by people that know how to do that. So the best thing you can do as a family member is you can't fix the person, but you can become the bridge from the person to the people that can help.
Yep. And we want to be that bridge for you. So give us a call. Well, great. Well, we are going to go on to the phone. We're going to talk to Larry here, who's calling from Folsom, California, from on the station KFIA. Hello, Larry.
Good afternoon. Thanks for being there, y'all.
You are welcome. You're welcome. Glad you called.
Thank you. I am, too. Hopefully. Yeah, this is the second call maybe in 60 days. Quick questions are, I've got two.
Okay.
I was recommended last time just to drop a note every week or so. So the question is, do I keep that up? I'm visiting weekly. The other question is, how do I get
You're visiting whom?
Wait.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Oh, I put you the questions first, then I want to tell you the story.
Oh, okay.
That doesn't work.
No.
Go ahead.
You're
go
wondering
ahead,
if you should follow up with somebody with a letter. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that was your recommendation a couple of 60
days
ago.
Well, I wasn't here, I don't think.
He'll tell us the story.
He's going to tell us the story.
Okay.
He's flip-flopping it.
Okay.
Okay. I'm a senior father, 60, and I have a 30-year-old daughter who's been diagnosed borderline personality disorder, but in my opinion is psychotic at the moment. She currently has a place to live, a home, an apartment she rents. Not taking care of herself. What do you call it? Collecting things. You know what I mean? What's
hoarding.
That?
Hoarding.
Yes. And monthly she gets into screaming fits, and they try to talk to her, threaten to evict and so forth. And I know she's got serious problems. I see her every other week just to show up and be there, not at her request, but as a caring dad who's trying to get her into hospital or care. Mm. She won't go there. Seems to work around the, what do you call it, the health check, when you call for the authorities to do a health check.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to get around those. So
you mean if she's suicidal or something and you call?
She's not.
Okay, for the
she's
triage
not
team?
Healthy.
Okay.
And the mental state is not improving, and it's getting worse.
Yeah.
And now talking to people along the way who aren't there. End of the word, apparently, all day long, which is good, but twist a little bit. Angel's always with her, telling her to do this or that.
Okay. So have you got a psychiatrist involved?
No, can't get anybody involved. Can't her get involved unless somehow she surrenders herself.
Well, what I would do, Larry, is I would call a good psychiatrist who's connected to a hospital. And many times, depending on kind of the ebb and flow of her increasing disorganization, sometimes there's a window in there where they actually can do something. But you really need to have a psychiatrist in the mix that you're in touch with.
Right, and that's my problem is getting her there.
No. I'm not talking about her.
I mean, wanting her to get there, whatever.
I understand. What I'm talking about is Larry talking to a psychiatrist about her and describing the ebb and flow of the pictures of the picture of how it all works. And the psychiatrist may be able to find a time or a window or even have a way where he or she can actually get into that circle. And sometimes there are conditions, especially in the state within which you live, where she doesn't have to be suicidal, but there are other conditions upon which she could be involuntarily hospitalized because the psychiatrist orders it under law.
Perfect.
But you've got to have somebody that has that legal capacity to do it, as well as the knowledge of what's going on with her, to insert himself or herself into your daughter's chaos at the right moment to do an involuntary hospitalization where she could get treated, and if she has a psychotic process, may be well able to be stabilized. But you got to find the window, and to do that, usually you need a psychiatrist to help you.
Perfect.
All righty.
Absolutely perfect.
Isn't that
brilliant.
Nice?
Thank you.
Great,
thanks.
Larry. I'm glad we could help you out there. And thanks, Henry. That was nice to just, you know, sometimes when you're up against the wall, you don't know. But you need that intervention. And
yeah, getting to the right resources.
Getting to the right resources, the right person, the right professional.
Yeah, and it's a hard one for family members.
It
because
is.
A lot of times you can be, You can be legally mentally ill and stay untreated mm-hmm. as long as you don't meet certain criteria by which somebody could involuntarily take care of you.
Right.
And that's a tricky dance, and it's very hard for family members. And so my heart goes out to you.
Absolutely. Well, we are here for you. Give us a call, 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Max Locato here. You know, I've been a pastor for over 25 years, and in the process, I've been fortunate to cross paths a few times with Steve Arterburn and his team at New Life. And I can tell you for a fact that these are good people doing real ministry work where the rubber meets the road. One of the ways they help people is through their New Life Weekend. The Apostle Paul writes about finding the transformation that comes from the renewing of your mind. That's what these folks at New Life specialize in. Whether you struggle with anger, unforgiveness, depression, grief, boundaries issues, maybe you've never worked through the pain of a past abortion, maybe you need a marriage tune-up, maybe your marriage is in crisis. Listen, these good people can help you. Call them today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 and ask about the New Life Weekend.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places. And New Life and membership in Club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense. And I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to New Life Live. I'm Sherry Denham, sitting in for Steve Arterburn, and I'm here with Henry and Jill. And let me ask you a question. What do you say to someone who needs to be with a therapist but is afraid of going to therapy?
Is this person potentially like talking to you about the topic?
Well, maybe you're having a conversation. It's
so
someone
saying,
that
you
needs
know, I
to
need
go.
Some help, but I'm afraid of therapy.
Yeah, but I'm afraid of therapy. What would you say to someone like that?
I would ask them, first of all, what their fear is.
Okay.
Right, because it's different for different people.
Yeah, because you hear a lot of stuff mm-hmm. like, well, I don't go to a therapist. They're just going to put me on a bunch of drugs, and I don't walk around drooling and not be able to think anymore. Right?
A lot of people have these stereotypes still that are so archaic. You know?
Do I have to lie on the couch, and the therapist doesn't say anything for 10 years?
And they just say, how are you feeling the whole time?
All this sort of stuff. And I don't want those secular humanists getting a hold of my brain.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to talk me out of my faith. And mm-hmm. you know, the Bible says that he who gives an answer before he understands is a fool. And sometimes we try to answer questions that aren't the real fear that somebody has. And so I think the first thing is to listen mm-hmm. and see what it is. But I think the second thing is that a lot of times people don't really know what therapy is about. Mm-hmm. That it's not somebody taking control of your mind. What it is it's someone who has the experience base to understand basically struggles in three areas of life that don't give way to kind of our normal friendly advice that our neighbors and loved ones give us. And the three mm-hmm. areas are clinically, if you're depressed or anxious or addicted or any kind of those broad kind of mood and anxiety, three areas.
Yep.
And you're depressed enough to where it's not getting better and all the ways that you used to make yourself feel better aren't working and all the advice you're getting from friends. Well, what a professional does is they've treated gazillions of depressed people, and they actually can help you get out of that. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The second area is relationally. If you had just come to the end of your rope in some significant relationship, whether it's marriage or children or extended family or parents or in-laws or work or dating or whatever it is, and there's a pattern or somebody that is driving you crazy, and you just don't have the skills or the skills or the strategy to deal with that, that's what therapists are trained to help you in.
Yeah.
And the third area is your performance in life. You know, we're made with talents and dreams and goals and abilities. And if you can't, for some reason, make that turn into a basket of fruit at the end of the day, that's what therapists are trained to deal with. And so mm-hmm. I just tell people, if you're struggling in those three areas and your normal answers aren't getting there, what a therapist does is come alongside you and bring training of having helped a lot of people out of those three areas of stuckness, but also with a spiritual understanding of God and your faith, so you're not talked out of your faith.
Yeah, and that's an important piece. That's something that we have to offer here at New Life, because we have over 900 therapists all across the nation that want to help you.
And you don't have to go see all 900.
No,
like one good one. One good one would do it.
Unless you don't
have MPD in 900 parts.
Talk about group therapy. One client, 900 therapists.
Now give us a call. We'd love to get you hooked into a therapist, a Christian therapist in your area. It's 1-800-NEW-LIFE. So let's go to the phones here. Let's talk to James. He called us from Seattle, Washington. KGNW is where the station you're calling from. Hey, James.
Hello. Hello. Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good.
I'm glad.
Good. Good. Well, how can we help you today?
Well, my question is, how do I really completely get myself over to God? Last 5 years. Hello?
Yeah. Yes, we're here.
We're here.
Yes, the last 5 years, been separated from my wife, been battling a drug addiction, been going to church, reading the Bible, you know, doing those procedures, but I'm still fighting with this drug addiction. So I was, you know, really trying to see how do I really commit myself to God.
James, what have you done for the addiction besides going to church?
I haven't gotten to groups. I have talked to people. I have.
Did you say you have gone to groups?
No, I have not. I have talked to people that, well, hold me accountable. You know, I guess I say hold me accountable, but that's not really solving the
problem. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. James, my heart goes out to you on that one, because look at it this way. Let's say that you had a horrible, horrible cough, and you were just really, really. You know, you got the flu, and every other, you try to say a sentence, and you're just, and you can't quit coughing. So you go to somebody and say, I want you to hold me accountable for this coughing. So they sit down, they say, okay, did you cough this week? And you go, yeah, I got to confess I coughed. Well, you know, how many times and which day? So they write them all down, and now they're going to hold you accountable, and you pray for forgiveness, and you go out there next week. And
you're try not, harder.
And you're not supposed to cough anymore, right?
Does that sound familiar, right. James?
Right.
Yeah.
because that's addiction.
But you're asking for help.
You're asking for help, and you're being held accountable. And I don't want to get too theological here on you, but what accountability does, among other things, which are good, but it counts, right? It counts how you're doing. It doesn't heal. And that's what Paul said. That's what Paul said in the book of Romans, that the standard or the law tells us basically that we have a problem, but it's useless to solve the problem. And what a lot of people do, which is really sad, is they try to use accountability to heal. And accountability does not heal. Accountability lets you know whether or not you are in the need of healing. And so if you're going to accountability and they're counting it up and they're saying, James, man, you're not stopping this, what that means is that's just a diagnostic test that says you've got to go get some healing. And what we know about healing addiction is that it does require the kind of groups that know how to deal with that cough that you can't control. See, the Bible says addiction. When it says addiction, it's like being caught up in a net that you can't get out of and you need help.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So we'd like to hook you up with some help. I mean, you are at the greatest place ever because you are asking God to help you. And it says, and you're saying, I can't help myself. And the Bible says, blessed are the poor in spirit. And you're coming in that place. And he will meet your need. But it's going to be in the context of his body of believers that you join in a group that know how to do this.
Right. And accountability is good, but it's just one small part of the process. And it isn't the main target that you're shooting for.
Yeah, right? It's a part of the diet. It's part of the the food groups.
So like a 12-step recovery group
for
addiction.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, James, that the first thing you said to us when we said, what have you done? You said, well, I haven't gone to groups, which tells me that maybe you have an inkling that groups would be a good thing. And so groups, right? So you already know that.
So what's keeping you from doing that? I've
made in my mind. That's one of the things I really feel I need to get myself involved with.
Yeah.
It's more than just, like you said, more than accountability group thing. Yeah.
Well, so you're kind of on the fence about really wanting help. You want help, but you don't want to have to do those groups and all the things it's going to take to really.
It's not that I don't want to have to do the groups.
Okay.
Well, in a way it is, because I haven't put the effort out that I should be putting out to actually find groups to help me improve myself.
And maybe, James, if you did get into a good 12-step group where you finally would be accountable with some people that you couldn't slip out between their fingers because they can smell it when you're not being honest, guess what?
Right.
And then maybe you would stop. And maybe that's what you don't want to happen.
It's kind of like pretending to get help.
I do. It's your step. I do.
You do.
What you're saying is correct. I say I do, but I haven't put the effort in to do it. And I also have one other question. Because of this drug addiction I'm facing, me and my wife have been separated throughout this time period. And she's chosen to be with someone else, and I'm wondering, is this, you know, this addiction is part of the plan to me, debate on about reconciling with her?
Well, it's very hard to make life decisions when you're addicted.
When you're using.
I think your first order of business, there's a verse in the Bible that says that we need to get the log out of our own eye first before we can see clearly, right? So in order for you to see clearly enough to know how to address your marriage, you got to be sober. And you got to be sober for a while until your brain is kind of dried out a little bit. So you make sobriety your first order of business, and your marriage, dealing with the marriage, is going to have to be done from a sober perspective.
James, you got to take your first step. Get into that group. All right. We'll be right back with New Life.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
I counsel people every single day. I help marriages. I help broken people find healing. I teach the good news of a Savior that loves us. But why can't I accept it myself and break free from this bondage? I can't stop looking at pictures that I shouldn't be looking at, and fantasizing and lusting, and now I've taken it a step further and gone to a strip club. I have to stop. I want to stop.
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help, and I can't do this on my own. I want to be the pastor that God wants me to be.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life, or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to New Life. We're here in the studio. This is Dr. Sherry Denham sitting in for Steve Arterburn, and I am with Henry Cloud and Jill Hubbard, and you, our callers. And so let's go to the phones here. I wanted to go to Anna, who's calling from Denver, Colorado, and she listens on station KRKS. Hey, Anna.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, I hear the stress in your voice. How can we help you?
Well, my question is, how do I help my daughter to stop cutting?
Oh, how long has she been cutting? How old is she?
She's 16, and she started when she was about 12.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And have you known this for 4 years?
Yes, yes. And it comes and goes. She, you know, she'll stop for a period of time, and we'll think everything is fine. And then when she gets stressed out real bad with school or relationships, she'll start again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yes. And what did you try?
Yeah.
She's been in counseling. I had her in counseling when she first started cutting. And she was in counseling for about 2 years, 2.5 years.
Did that help?
Better. Yes, it did. She got better. But as soon as the counselor released her, she gradually and slowly went back into it again.
You know, what's interesting with cutting is a couple things. People cut because either they are feeling too much emotion, and cutting feels like a way that they can kind of hurt it out. The pain actually helps them to release some of that hurt. Or people cut because they're not feeling enough. They're not feeling enough. And so they cut to actually feel life, to feel something come in them. So it's interesting that she actually stopped cutting when she left therapy. Because I think for her...
She started cutting after she left therapy.
Because that was like an outlet for her.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a really important outlet for her with a four-year history of cutting. It is not something that's optional for her. She has got to be in a safe place where she's releasing that emotions in a healthy way. Because cutting, as you know, is really hurtful.
And I wonder if she was really ready to stop the therapy. I mean, sometimes someone is doing better. That isn't necessarily... mean it's time to stop. Usually right. They need to be doing better for a while. And I wonder if that, you know, stirred up a huge loss for her.
How long should she be doing okay before therapy should be
Well, maybe that's not the best way to say it. But
yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a question. My question would be, after she started cutting, did you call the therapist back?
Why didn't you go back?
I didn't call a therapist back because I thought that she had gathered enough tools that we could work through it and she would stop.
But it's not about tools. Yeah. In this case, cutting is all feeling based. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's not like she can just add something and carry it. It is release. She's looking for release.
Okay.
Or she's looking for structure. And other things. A lot of times, behaviors like this, it does have to do with feelings, but it can also have to do with an attempt to provide a coping mechanism and provide structures and things that are part of what she needs in the equipment of her head to feel competent and able to kind of deal with life. And that's why many times it's important after the behavior has stopped, that's really when therapy kind of begins. And there's a spectrum of impulse disorders where therapy is always seen in phases. There's the crisis, and so you start. And then there's this phase where you're trying to get control of destructive impulses. And after the destructive impulses are controlled, that's when the reorganization of the personality and the growth and building structure inside and internalized love and skills and all that sort of stuff happens, because you're not cutting anymore.
Right.
And so that's what I think both Sherry and Jill are saying to you, that there's...
Yeah, just because there's symptom relief, you don't stop therapy.
Right. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's really when therapy can kind of start. And and Anna, as loving as you are, and as much as you care, mothers can't be the total therapeutic picture.
Right.
You know, she needs, especially at that age, she's trying to find her own way of standing on the earth on her own two feet, separate from mother, even though you're a vital part of her life. And sometimes a transitional space, like a good therapist, can help that.
So think of it as a relationship that you just don't cut out.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Nice. No, no pun intended. Yeah, that was beautiful.
Right. So, no, I got it, though.
Good, good. Well, I hope there was something there that we were able to share, Anna, that was helpful.
Yeah, and Anna, just have some hope. I mean, you know, people get over this.
They do. Okay. They grow
and they can
through
do
it
very well in life. Yeah.
I have a practice.
She's got more growing up to do.
I probably have in my practice, because I deal a lot with trauma. Probably have maybe a third of it are people that have cut.
Really
that
common with trauma.
Yep, it is. It's really common with trauma. So what should we send out to Anna? What might be a good resource for her in light of that?
There are good books on cutting, and I can't think of the name right now, but we don't offer them.
Inside a Cutter's Mind is a great one. Inside a Cutter's Mind would be a good one. So that's out there, and it's one I use for my clients. And it's faith-based. It's a faith-based book.
It's by Dr. Actually, Henslin?
No. Dr. Henslin actually wrote the foreword, or maybe helped her with it, actually.
Right. I think
it's Jerusha, and I'm trying to think her.
Oh, yeah.
Her last name used to be Redford, but she was in the junior high group when I was working at the church, and a pastor's wife. She was one of the junior hires, so I was so proud to see her book, and I'm like, that's Jerusha.
So she's a therapist now?
Yeah. Isn't that so cool? Cool. So. Well, and I want to let all of us know, first off, we're so grateful for those of you that listen every day. And it's really a privilege to be with you. Thank you for supporting us. And here we are in the summer months. It's June. It's oftentimes the summer months that everyone has everything going on and you're paying for gas and airline tickets and all. But we want to ask that you remember us in that. Larry Sonnenberg, who's our president of New Life Ministries, was in recently and just was kind of giving us the update on what's happening right now. And he said it's kind of like when you're at the beach and they have the flag days and there's a red flag and a yellow flag and a green flag. He said, we're in that yellow flag zone of trying to heightened concern. We've lost a few radio programs, and we don't want to lose more, but we really need your help. And so if you have been thinking about giving to us, if today, you know, just thinking about these phone calls, this ministry is so unique, and God uses it as a vehicle to help touch lives, and it's supported by you as our listeners. So if you could take that step, if you've never given to our ministry, but you've thought about it at one point, would you just take that step and give us a call today? We'd love to get you into our Club New Life.
Right. And we've been in lots of crisis points, but it's really an ongoing need.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, each month we have to face that.
Yeah, in April, we actually added 1,000 new Club Life members, 1,000 people. And that's the goal, is if we can add another 1,000 people to our New Life family, New Life Club, then we won't have to come back to you all during airtime when we'd love to be taking more calls. We don't have to come back to you. At that point, we would have that financial support we need. So please think about us. Give us a call. We so value you. We do ask that the Lord continues to anoint this ministry and move in and among it. I'm so grateful for you, Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. Jill Hubbard, for being with us today and for you as our listeners.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by giving you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us on Monday for New Life Live.